there's no point getting a solution architect who's experienced and an expert at designing ERP solutions and then telling that person how to design it or what to do with it. You need to trust that person and let them express their skills.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Hey, Jack here. Glad you're joining us. A few months back, we had the pleasure of having an in-depth conversation about effective ERP transformation with Mr. Ganapathy Iyer. Ganapathy is focused on education and teaching organizations how to use his own words, create and sustain vibrant, motivating, and safe project teams that have fun working together and delivering a great outcome. Ganapathy's expertise is so well aligned with my own motivations and with that of this podcast, the ERP OCJ, that we wanted to have him back and continue the conversation. Collectively, we work to increase the success rate of ERP implementations by focusing on the people component of the triad: people, processes, and technology. Healthy organizational culture, team development, and the right kind of focused leadership are critical to the successful outcomes that both Ganapathy and Nessel & Associates seek to achieve. So on today's episode, we will continue our deep dive into effective ERP transformation. Be sure to catch episode 47 for part one of the conversation. You can stream it from the podcast homepage. Just head over to www.nesselassociates.com. In a quick refresher, Mr. Iyer is an author, speaker, and projects facilitator. He has spent years across many countries helping organizations structure, deliver, or recover technology-enabled transformation projects. He is the author of Reboot, How to Put Joy Back into Troubled Technology Projects, and he is a certified project professional and a certified Scrum Master. Joining us from Auckland, New Zealand, Ganapathy, welcome back to the show. We're so excited to have you back.
Happy New Year, Jack, and Happy New Year to your listeners as well. Good to be back.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. And again, we appreciate your time and really looking forward to sharing your wonderful insight. So for our listeners, you know, when we had you on the first time, we had a fun conversation and we had five or so other questions that Nessel & Associates wanted to pick your brain on.
Looking forward to it.
So Ganapathy, what's your thoughts on effective project sponsorship? Does project sponsorship really matter in successful projects, and why or why not?
Project sponsorship has been there ever since projects ever started. And I personally believe it's a key discipline in the world of projects. But unfortunately, unlike project management, which has a lot of support and resources to help develop, project sponsorship still continues to be a trial and error, hit and miss kind of activity. And quite often, in fact, I think it's most of the times, the people sponsoring these projects are people who have day jobs, who have KPIs and objectives that are completely different to what the projects are set out to achieve. And I've seen a lot of sponsors over the years where they're also responsible for devising the strategies to which these projects are aligned to. They kick off projects, they appoint reputed and credible project managers. And yet, when I have conversations with them, it almost feels like they're sitting on a minefield, not knowing which landmine will blow up. Yeah. And unfortunately, they just do not have anything as a precedence or support unless they have a good project manager who can coach and guide them. Now, this is where the conundrum arises, because the project manager is supposed to be reporting into a sponsor or the steering group. And how do you then expect the same project manager to coach, mentor you? It does become quite difficult. And unfortunately, if you don't have an active or engaged sponsor, it doesn't really matter how great a project is and how well it is aligned to strategy. It just can't get executed properly. And what happens when that starts to surface is you see a lot of divergence, scope creep, all the classic project management routines that start falling apart are somewhere or the other linked to sponsorship. KPMG, Deloitte, a number of other organizations do project management surveys every few years. And sponsorship and governance are key topics that still remain areas of concern. And I personally believe this has to do with three things. One is, I think sponsors are taking on far more projects than they should. Now, each one of us, assuming all of us are human, which we are, has limited capacity. We just cannot keep piling projects on projects and projects and expect that everything would be fine. Projects have to be carefully chosen. Now, if you have to be an effective sponsor, if you have to be an engaged and active sponsor, the first thing I believe needs to come is investment. The sponsor must personally benefit from the outcomes of the project. And I do not mean this in, you know, in a selfish kind of sense where you're going to get a promotion or additional money. But you or your team has to have some tangible, real benefit that'll help you be more effective or serve your customers better or operate more efficiently. And if that's not the case, then you really need to question whether this project even needs to kick off. Because it's very difficult to stay interested if you're not invested. So investment is the first part. The second one is involvement. Now, I've seen a lot of scenarios where the project manager struggles to get time with the sponsors. You know, common refrains like, oh, you know, the sponsor will have 30 minutes in about 4 weeks' time. And if you can't do that, we can do 15 minutes in 7 weeks' time. Now, your involvement is key. If you're holding someone accountable, you need to be present. If you cannot be present, then there are two outcomes that come out of it. Either project teams will completely switch off and lose interest, which means your project's going nowhere, or at the other extreme, they will start making choices that may not align with strategy. And there's no one stopping them or even guiding them from how well or not it aligns with strategy. Now, what when that happens, either of them, the results are going to be there for you to bear with. Because end of the day, as a sponsor, while you are accountable, while you get to enjoy the benefits and there's a personal investment option in there for you, you are also accountable for the risks and the impacts if the projects don't go as per what you've planned. So involvement is the other one. And the third thing is influence. Now, as a sponsor, a project is all about you. You're the face of the project. And projects are creative endeavors. Even within ERP implementations, no two ERP implementations are the same. The context within which they are implemented are significantly different for each organization. And based on the context and the environment, a sponsor does need to influence different people and different setups for people to come together and pursue a common path so that, you know, your objectives can be achieved. Now, this involves engaging with your peers, making them feel excited about the project. You can't force anybody to sign in, even if you have the authority to do so. If you don't create something exciting for them, well, very few people engage. It's almost like organizing a music concert. Just putting up a banner outside the venue will not make it a success. There's a lot more that goes into it. So for me, sponsorship is what enables brilliant execution. And it's also sponsorship that can cause projects not to deliver to strategy. You know, at the end of the day, you can place the blame on the project manager, but you know that the project manager is there to help you deliver strategy through projects. And the strategy is your baby. So sponsorship for me still remains equally important as it was ever before.
Absolutely. Well, that's great, Ganapathy. And I just want to share with our listeners, and we'll have this in our show notes as well, but you have an article called On Sponsorship, Strategy, Execution, and Accountability. But, you know, you mentioned some key ideas, Ganapathy, and one is sponsorship is a key discipline in the world of projects, as you mentioned, but yet it's often neglected. And because it's neglected, it can sometimes turn out to be more of a trial and error process. But I think that the project needs to include a deliberate and tactical approach and actually built into the plan to help create sponsorship accountability. And without engaged sponsor planning, it may be a great plan, but the execution can suffer because, as you'd mentioned, part of the role of sponsorship, among other very important items, is governance. You need to be present to hold people accountable, including yourself as a sponsor. You know, Ganepathy, I think it was very well said, and I think maybe I would summarize your answer by saying that, in part, sponsors are ultimately accountable to engage with peers and share the humanity of the project, right? I mean, that's part of their job, is to just be part of the community of the stakeholders that are trying to get it done, and just share in that experience and be engaged. And therefore, you include accountability of yourself and others, and you play that governance role, and you're more in tune with what's going on.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you're just going through the motion.
Yeah. Yep. We've seen that. Yeah. Very, very good point. And Ganepathy, since we're discussing project management in the context of ERP organizational change or digital transformation, we know that data migration is often not only a significant challenge, but also significantly undermined. So do you have any words of wisdom in terms of effective management on the data migration process?
I spent a majority of my career doing a lot of ERP data migration. So this is an area that's quite close to my heart.
So you're a glutton for punishment. That's a tough job. That's a very tough job.
It is. And see, the challenge with data is, quite often, it is treated as a technical discipline. And even with all the talk about the need for organizations to be data-driven, data-enabled, so on and so forth, people still have a bit of an allergy towards data. And that's because we do not make it easy for people to understand. Jack, I remember one of your podcasts with a security expert, I'm missing his name, but that gentleman mentioned one thing which struck me quite well. He said the biggest challenge in the cybersecurity space is the inability of technical experts to speak the language of people, or something to that effect. Okay, and I think it's the same. It applies equally well to data as well, because especially ERP and HRIS kind of project, because there's a whole interrelation aspect of data that needs to be taken care for it to work effectively. And in my experience, a lot of organizations struggle with data migration, even though this is not new. So data migration in itself probably is now commodity and is no longer a lucrative sort of business. But whenever I walk into projects that are in trouble, I think data is one of the first one that comes to mind where people just have completely got it wrong. And it all starts with, getting data into an ERP is easy. Sure, if you have the right templates and the data in the right formats, complying with what the requirements are, then it is easy. Where people go wrong is two aspects that I've seen. One is trying to put everything they have into the new system. And it's almost like stuffing yourself up and expecting not to have indigestion.
Right.
The second one is they underestimate the effort that it takes to actually get data into formats that the new ERP, HRIS, payroll, CRM solution will accept. Now, what people need to understand out here is, end of the day, you need to start with what your target looks like, what your new system, your new processes, and your new ways of working look like. And when you start there, the question that you need to ask is, what data do you need to run those processes, those systems, effectively? If you spend enough time asking that question, you will have a very clear view of what is required for you to enable a successful data migration. A lot of organizations do not spend enough time doing that. They jump into data migration, they get some templates, they chuck data into it, and they just hope it works. That's the first thing. The second thing is also looking at what else do you have. Now, typically when you're migrating to a new ERP or implementing a fresh ERP solution, you've got data scattered in a whole lot of places. I don't think any organization ever complains about not having enough data. They just have too much data and they do not know where it is, and it's scattered, disjointed. So it's worth asking, what else do you have? So almost inventorizing all your data sources gives you a good view of what data is there. What I also see this helping is quite often, sometimes, because you have data that you've maintained in different pockets, you probably haven't considered the need for that while designing your ERP processes or systems. And this exercise of finding out what data you have can often be a good feedback loop into designing processes over and above helping with data migration. Now, once you do both of these, the thing worth asking is, end of the day, you want to use the data in the solution. That's the whole point of migrating data. Otherwise, most organizations would have just implemented a new solution and just started off from scratch. You can't, in most cases, do that unless you've got a very careful strategy of being able to make that work. Now, if you're going to make it work with processes in the new system, then you might as well test it upfront. You might as well test it early with your data. If you look at a lot of ERP projects going live, their biggest problems come from data that they migrated across. Creating new data, initially, it's a case of people learning how to use the system. And psychologically, if there's a thing that you have to get up and do every day, you will struggle for the first few times, but eventually you'll start getting used to it. You'll start using it. It's like brushing or taking a shower. Maybe it felt hard the first time we did it, but we don't feel it any longer. We do it. It's data that you take in from the old systems that is not compliant, and you have to do a lot of different manual interventions or manipulations to make it work that actually slows down adoption and stabilization immediately after go live. This is also what dictates the first impressions of your solution once you've gone live. If people can't use it, then people are likely to find other ways of getting the same work done. That's where new Excel spreadsheets and Word documents and PowerPoints start coming in. And even right from the start, you've compromised on adoption. And that then dilutes all the benefits. So in my experience, if you treat data as a business proposition and have data as a discussion point at your governance forums, especially the steering group, some of the most successful ERP implementations I've seen have had data at the steering group. They've had data as a sponsor conversation. Sure, we don't discuss individual records and all of that technical detail, but we do discuss what's the readiness of data. People readiness is one thing. Data is the other one. And if you make that a business proposition, a topic of business importance, people will get involved. People will do the cleansing. It's not glamorous work. Cleansing data or making it ready for migration is not glamorous work. But end of the day, it's data that actually dictates how well your system's adopted and helps you deliver services or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Just such a critical job, like you said. And it's not always glamorous because it is a lot of work, but it's so important. And we actually have on a current project, the team often refers to data mapping and data validation as the longest pole in the tent, meaning that it's absolutely critical. It's the piece that holds everything together. And, you know, I think we could easily spend a whole hour of data migration discussion. That would be pretty easy.
Absolutely.
There's a lot on this topic and really a lot to talk about. Effective data mapping, process, methodology. So just really an important topic. And by the way, for our listeners, Ganapathy, thanks for the call out. You were referring to, I believe, episode 39, The Smartest Person in the Room. And our guest on that episode was Christian Espinosa. So thanks for that shout out. So Ganapathy, you know, again, we're talking a bit here about effective ERP implementation and project management. So what would you say, and do you have any thoughts on PM tools, whether it be project management software, dashboards, mobility, real-time data availability, just any thought on in terms of using project management tools?
Project management tools, or tools in general. I heard a phrase from a gentleman called Colin Ellis way back in 2018 or 2017 at a project management conference, and it's still stuck with. He said, a fool with a tool is still a fool. So over the past few years, and this is not specific to ERP, this is project management, portfolio management, a whole lot of areas, almost any area that you work in, tools are all around us, and so are the sales professionals. In fact, with software as a service kind of tools, it's easy to sign up to any tool using your credit card, and it just doesn't seem expensive either. Like, I can sign up to monday.com for free. I can sign up to Asana for free. I can sign up to other tools for free. Now, getting the tools is easy, but what happens is each tool brings with it its own ways of working. And if they're not aligned to your ways of working and the needs that you have as an organization or even as an individual, then you're just going to be adding more and more and more and still not be able to get the outcomes that you desire. You'll still be drowning in tools. And at an enterprise level, this is even more important, because if different people are using different tools, then you will struggle to get visibility of the work that's being done or be able to coordinate work amongst teams and amongst individuals. Now, this for me is the key aspect of selecting any tool, and project management tools in particular. Now, quite often, if you want to have a visibility of people, and resource forecasting is a classic example of this. Most often people use different tools to forecast who is going to be allocated to which project, and other projects just do not know about it. And this is all done in a tool of their convenience, sometimes Excel spreadsheets. And what this does is eventually it starts impacting different projects. If you are not intentional about selecting the right tool to fit your needs, then you will always struggle with whatever tool you choose. End of the day, all of these tools, whether they're cloud-based like the Jiras and the Asanas and the Monday.coms of the world, or the classic old school MS Project Primavera kind of software, they all do the job. It's about you being clear on what's the job you need done and how does it align to your ways of working, because the tool is as good as the person using it.
Good points. And part of it is with the right tools, you know, like you said, whether it's a project management tool or project management software, or maybe it's a business dashboard, operational dashboard, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, really the purpose is to help. Well, it provides many purposes, right? But one is to help be more effective and efficient in obtaining the outcome of the project. For instance, in the case of a project management, but it's also to do things maybe a little faster, right? Make sure everybody's aligned, create visibility and accountability and so forth. And you actually had an article that I liked, Ganepathy. It was called Right and Fast, Without Skills, Neither Matter. And I like that. And it kind of ties into the previous question. And in that article, you asked the question, quote, what is needed to do the right thing? Do it right and do it faster. You then share that, quote, a lot of my clients come up with words like trust, purpose, people, attitude, teamwork, autonomy, communication, among other things. But what's the real answer to that great question? What's needed to do the right thing and to do it right and to do it faster?
I've always believed that you need a base amount of skills and competence. Without competence, you might have a great attitude. And make no mistake, a great attitude, you know, the whole thing around being easy and joy to work with is important. But with projects, you need the skills. Okay. It's almost like asking the question, would you allow a bunch of great mates to fly a plane, obviously with you seated in it, if you knew they weren't qualified pilots? You wouldn't, right? You wouldn't. If you look at some of the air disasters that happen, quite a few of them now happen because the airlines and the aircrafts have got so sophisticated that people have forgotten the art of flying, or their flying muscle has actually not been used. And sometimes when things go wrong, it becomes difficult for them to anticipate what to do. Now, for me, it boils down to skill and how you keep them honed up. So often we see in the context of ERP implementations, a poorly designed process can create havoc. And people think the answer to this is getting a lot of certifications. Sure, certifications help. You wouldn't want to implement an ERP like an SAP or an Oracle ERP cloud or anything for that matter without the right certifications. But if you don't understand the process and how people interact with it, and you do not have the skill to translate that into making it work into an ERP sort of solution, you will always struggle to get something well designed and effective. Now, it's the same with any discipline. Like at the moment, there's a lot of focus on shifting away from projects and dealing with it in a product sort of mindset. You still need a skilled product owner. You need a product owner who understands what the customers of that product require. You need a product owner who understands how things work so that he or she can prioritize and decide what features to include. You just cannot have anybody turn up and be a product owner if they do not understand what's important and what's of value to the people you serve. Same thing with doing it right. If you have a car mechanic who's not qualified, most likely you're going to get tripped off. So it boils down to having the right skills at the right place and letting people do it. The other thing with skills is people hire a lot of great talent with the right skills and then tell them what to do. So getting skills is not enough. You also need to let people express those skills and make sure that they contribute so that you can get value out of them. There's no point getting a solution architect who's experienced and an expert at designing ERP solutions and then telling that person how to design it or what to do with it. You need to trust that person and let them express their skills. So there are two aspects. Getting skills and letting people express those skills is what will help you get complex initiatives across the line.
Yeah. Wow, that was good. That was a good response. And skills can be obtained through many mechanisms, right? Including knowledge and experience. And I think that often ERP organizational change is it's kind of a craft. It's a combination of technical skills and art almost, in my view. And that only comes through developing your skills and being aware and cognizant, like yourself, being very reflective of the experience. And I really like what you said about the expression of skills. You know, you need to get the right people, because without the right people with the right skills, neither being right nor fast matter. But at the same time, when you get those people, you need to put them in an environment where they're able to kind of express and really utilize those skills. Really great response.
Even with skills, a simple thing as email. I've been reading a book called A World Without Email by Cal Newport, and it's an interesting book. I would recommend your listeners to pick it up. It's quite a reflective and practical book at the same time. And it talks about email. Now, email was introduced to help us with some of our asynchronous conversations so that we can make them easy. But a recent study that was done by the University of California in Irvine suggested that an average user of email checks their email about 77 times a day, with the heaviest users doing it 400 times. Now, wow. I think, Look at the amount of time we're wasting, because I don't think email as a skill is being taught to anyone. This includes you and me. I've never had training on email. It's just something I picked up and used.
Right.
And I don't think any of us have good skills in email, as a result of which we just get frustrated. Every new email coming in almost urges us to respond, even when we know that the sender probably just sent it so that, you know, they can get on with their next piece of work and they're not expecting an immediate response. We still attempted to read it, drop everything we have with significant loss of productivity, context switching, and making it far more difficult to do our jobs effectively. So that's something I thought I'll share with you.
That's a great point. And in fact, I have not read that book, but we will take a look and I'll put that in a link in our show notes for sure. Yeah. And talk about a tool, right? We were talking about project management tools. Well, clearly email is one of those.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, that's the fundamental tool. And, you know, a lot of people use that to schedule meetings and stay organized and follow up. And so it's a very powerful tool. And it can be what I've often heard referred to as e-waste. You know, I've heard people refer to email as e-waste, electronic waste. And if it's not managed, because if it's not managed, it manages you.
Oh, it does. It does.
So, Ganapathy, I know this conversation really, again, it's part two for our listeners, and we just wanted to circle back with you. But I know it's been a conversation, it's been a bit of a mixed bag, and really to hit on some effective ERP transformation influences, you know, some interesting topics that we just wanted to have you share. But what would you say based on this conversation and some of the things we just shared here? What would you say to our listeners? How would you summarize what we've talked about here and just provide them a tip that they can take with them and apply it to their practice?
I think if you look at the topics that we discussed today, whether it's sponsorship, data, tools, skills, they're all to do with people. And at the heart of it, I think it talks about three things, really. One is consideration for what helps people you're working with or you're choosing to serve. Because if you do not have consideration for that, then you're pretty much doing something that satisfies your own ego. The second thing is about commitment, because each one of them, whether it's sponsorship, using data, or promoting a particular tool over the other, it's about commitment. It's about saying, we believe this is the right thing for us to do, and we want to back it. And lastly, it's about conviction. Because if you look at a lot of ERP projects or change management initiatives, they all talk the right thing. Nobody turns up and says, oh, we're not going to do any change management, or we're not going to give people the right environment to succeed. But execution-wise, it's quite difficult. And one of the things that I take from this conversation is also having the conviction to keep doing it. If you are not in conviction of any of these, whether it's sponsorship, data, tools, or skills, you will always struggle to convince and sell your ideas or your hypothesis to others. So I think people are still at the heart of everything we discussed today. And I don't think that'll ever change till you keep doing projects or till the machines replace all of us humans.
You know, I like what you said about conviction, you know, the conviction to keep doing it. And that's a pretty critical influence and a lot to talk about, a lot of things underneath that idea of conviction. But then you mentioned that people are at the heart of everything. And I sense that Ganapathy in our conversation today, your people-centric approach to your trade. And it kind of reminds me of, we had Dr. Todd Dewitt, who was a guest on one of our episodes. And he mentioned a word a few times that just got my attention as well. And that was this idea of humanity. You know, humanity is critical to leadership, and humanity and embedding that within your process is critical to ERP organizational change success. And I think I heard that idea come up through our conversation today, actually. And I think that's a pretty important point for people to think about. You know, ERP organizational change takes a huge commitment and it puts a lot of stress and burden on your internal team and your stakeholders. But at the end of the day, you know, we're all people. Ganapathy, thank you so much for your time today, as usual. And it's always fun talking to you, and we appreciate it. We are really grateful that we had the chance to continue the conversation. And I'll tell you, Ganapathy, I'm personally grateful for the work you do. I think Ganapathy, through research and practice, friends and colleagues like you are having positive impacts in ERP and digital transformation and organizational change success. So thank you much. For our listeners, please be sure to check out ganapathyiyer.com, and the link is in the show notes. Once again, share with us the best way, Ganapathy, that our listeners can get in touch with you.
The best way is find me on LinkedIn or to my website, ganapathyiyer.com. And likewise, Jack, it's been a pleasure coming back and having a conversation with you. And the feeling that you expressed about my work is mutual and equally intense.
Well, thank you very much. And Ganapathy, you have some great posts, some really great reflections, some great points. And I think that's why you have such a following. I think you're genuine and authentic. So thank you again. Be well, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Thank you so much. You have a good evening.
You bet.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, hashtag the ERP OCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.